Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Slowdown. Today I'm absolutely delighted to be joined by Rhian Wilkinson, the Welsh women's team national coach. Rhian, big warm welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Rhian, as we begin with every guest that comes on, could you please take us through your earliest football memory?
My first team were the Strawberries. We had red jerseys, and yeah, I just remember loving it. I don't have a specific memory. And you see pictures, and you can't remember if that's a memory or if you've just seen the picture. But I do remember loving that team and getting to play together, and I remember hating the Avocados, who are our biggest rivals.
Strawberries versus the avocados. I
Yeah.
think that the stakes have changed a small bit since, but obviously an awful lot of people listening to the show, I mean, they've come to know you as a coach over these last 7 8 years, but what a lot of people tend to miss is obviously the 180 plus caps as part of the Canadian women's team, being part of that golden era. What did it mean to you to represent your country?
I think a lot of people would say sort of a dream come true, but it was probably not even a dream. I was never the best player on any of my teams, but I was very motivated and driven, and I do think I worked very hard, and I think that's the story of my career, whether it be soccer, coaching, is that sort of you come in and you're not there yet, and I'm willing to go for it. I think a lot of people are, and what I saw is a lot of people who had a natural gift or talent maybe weren't working as hard as I was, and so I would overtake them. And I made the provincial team, and the coach said, "You were the last person to make the team, but you made it on attitude or good character." I remember that, and thinking that's a good thing, but also I'm going to prove you wrong, And that was part of it. And the national team was so far away, something I never could see myself doing. And it was the same story. I came into the team when someone got hurt, and they needed an extra body on the pitch. And then that camp, that person, the person ahead of me got injured, so I ended up on the field. Like, things just happened. And I think that's probably what I've taken the most out of my career, saying yes to things and not being intimidated when I wasn't quite ready, and believing that I could get there. And that I, 180 odd caps of just continuously pushing standards until I couldn't anymore, and then it was an easy decision to retire.
It's definitely a special mindset that you need to obviously play international football and to play professional women's football, but to play those many games over those many years, it's quite special. And you spoke there about kind of the hard work ethic ingrained. Is that something which you found naturally you wanted to take into your coaching?
I think it's pretty ingrained into who you are. I think hard work is such a broad term, and what do I mean by it is probably the interest in trying to improve yourself, in being willing to be humble in what you don't know and ask for help. And some people take advantage of that, and they see that as weakness, especially in a woman. That's what I found after my career, but it is the only way to continuously push standards. And so when I say hard work, it encompasses a lot, and I think that that's something that I've always had, and it just changes in the new job I'm in, or in the what role that so coaching a club is different than coaching country is different than coaching this country is different than coaching that. So where is it that I need to put my attention and ask questions and be vulnerable, and that changes depending on the job.
And it's amazing how you spoke about different contexts. I think the one thing I omitted as well, obviously playing as a defender, seeing the game, from back to front and whatnot, and obviously playing for that long. I mean, we've seen obviously a lot of goalkeepers, a lot of defenders, a lot of holding midfielders tend to transition into coaching. So I'm wondering, and I'm curious just to ask Rhian, in terms of when you were playing, was there any point of your journey in which you foresaw yourself eventually moving down the coaching pathway?
Nope, I never wanted to be a coach, and I was pretty vocal about it. I enjoyed the game. I liked talking about the game. I actually watched a lot of football. I think many of the women my generation didn't enjoy watching it. I loved it. The Premiership was always on in the house when my father wasn't watching, because he was only a rugby man. But I think from my end, I didn't have many female role models. In the ones that I did see were seemed quite angry and aggressive, And they had to be. Now I have all the time in the world for those women who had to break down the barriers and who were constantly having to fight. And that is the persona that I was picking up on. And they had to do that. And I think from that end, I couldn't see past it. And I was like, oh, I don't want to be like that. But by the time I was about to retire, I was given opportunities to take my coaching badges. And that is something I do think I do well, which is I say yes to opportunities. So I was getting my coaching badges. And then, people saw that I was, I was a decent teacher. I liked teaching. I liked working with young people. And they saw those two things. And they gave me sort of the assistant coach for a youth team. And I just started doing it and recognized that it is actually something I really love doing and that I didn't have to follow in anyone's footsteps to do it. I could make it uniquely my own. And since then, so many women now are coming through and who are bringing their own unique selves. Just like men, there's all different types of female coaches, and it's not what I had thought it was going to be.
Yeah, it's interesting you speak there about breaking down barriers, and you've uniquely stayed true to yourself in terms of your own skill sets and whatnot. And I think there's a turning point as a coach when you realize you're doing all the coaching courses, you can go see as many sessions as you want, even mentorship at times. It becomes not a transactional process, but the biggest tool and the biggest lever which you could use at any time is kind of focusing in and honing in on your own strengths, it seems.
Yeah, and creating a group around you that supports you in the areas where you're lacking. And I think I'm always nervous of people who maybe want to take on everything themselves. I think that the biggest gift we can give as coaches is to give ourselves a strong team around us, because the players are all going to connect with someone different, and it's a very short career. As like football is so quick, and how do we give the players as much attention and as much time as we possibly can, knowing that it's not fair? It's not at all fair. In fact, it's professional sports, one of the most unfair things. So how do you do the best you can to make these young people feel as seen as possible? And I think you can only do that with a strong group around you who have very different skill sets than you have yourself.
And obviously, that staff management and staff recruitment being just one but big part of the job nowadays, Rianne. And you spoke earlier on about switching different contexts. You've gone from club to youth national teams, senior national teams, and you've coached at the highest of levels. I mean, obviously, all this within a short space of time, relatively in the last 7, 8 years. Kind of how has your approach changed at each step?
Well, international coaching and club coaching are two very different things, and I'm so I think for there's a lot of things. I think for women, international coaching is actually, especially if women are have children, it's quite it's one of the only coaching careers that really gives you a little bit more ability to be a very present parent. I'm just finishing my pro license to the FAW, and it was always interesting talking to the men because they have children at home with their wives and their career, and a lot of they don't understand some of the challenges that women have. But international coaching is definitely where I think we've seen Emma Hayes, Casey Stoney. We've seen women moving into this, Carla Ward, Tanya Oxbury. It goes on. People are starting to recognize that it's a form of coaching where you can maybe balance is not a thing, but you can get some kind of time with family and still pursue your career. But they're very different. I love club in terms of that is where you're really coaching. That is where the development takes place. And I do miss that piece a lot. The management is fairly similar, different politics, potentially different sort of chain of command, but internationally you borrow them from club and you can suggest all you'd like on what they work at, but you can't really help them through. And if the coach of their club doesn't agree with you, they can't really do that work. It doesn't work with their loading, preparing for games. So it's a different kind of job. And I would say it's very much a management job now. And that is something that is great for where I'm at in my life, but equally it's very hard because I do miss the actual coaching.
It's an interesting one, the management piece, right? Because if you look at the sport of football, 21st century, it's not as, but what you see on the field is the final product it is, but it's the accumulation of this kind of healthy integration between football, between the sports science, between recruitment, data science, you name it, so on and so forth. So obviously, be it an international coach or be it a club coach, obviously you'll have different remits, of course, but nonetheless, you have to manage your body of staff, as you eloquently put earlier on, have to have different personalities, and you have to kind of remove all biases from hiring. What's your way, or what's your philosophy in terms of management in bringing these group of people, these, I would say, these diverse staff members together with the ultimate aim of getting these 11 women performing in a football field on a Saturday?
I'm not a micromanager. I'm not, and I can't be. And if someone requires that oversight, then they just aren't the right person for me. I like having high performers around me who are trying to achieve their own standards, and sort of we all fit together and we all have to fit together. So in that way, the communication and the timings of when we're connecting and what we're connecting about is really important. But I do think for international, I'm one of the only ones who's full time. Almost everyone else is part time. And in that way, I also borrow my staff. So they're doing it because of the love of the game, of the team, of what they're trying to achieve on the international stage. So I can ask something of them, but equally, I need to give them the space and I need to hold standards if I think it needs to be improved. And equally, I accept that feedback. I'm very aware of, I hope I want to be aware of where my weaknesses lie because I want to get better and I want those people around me. And that happens quite, it sounds terrible, but it does happen slightly naturally because people will not want to work with me if they need something different. And it's not a fight, it's not a huge deal. Like any job, if the environment is not the one that you want it to be, then it's we got to make it different because you spend a lot of time together. So everyone wants to be able to enjoy that experience.
And then it sounds for me like a never-ending seesaw and balance in terms of you are who you are, in terms of you want those high standards, and obviously you want to remain that, you want to kind of keep that credibility with your players and support staff. However, at the same time, it's a balance, obviously, with the players becoming younger and younger in the dressing room, younger support staff members. So, like, how do you find yourself stretched across between like navigating the high standards piece to being as empathetic as you possibly can to everyone?
Yeah, I think that was a good distinction. So the staff themselves are learning. We're whales. I think we're punching above our weight. We've got huge ambition, but equally we're not bringing, we don't pay in a way that we can bring in the top people, but we've got really ambitious, excited people that want to take on a role and learn and grow in it. So part of my job is to make sure they get some mentorship. So that they feel like after their time with the country that it's first been a positive experience, but equally they've made connections and they're able to test their work against other people in the field. I love that about the women's game. There is a lot of sharing. The players as well, I mean, we are a nation of 3 million. We've got to have something that sets us apart. And I think we have to be tactically adaptable, which takes time and it takes trust from the players, and it doesn't always work. And to do that, they've got to trust me. And so it takes time. It takes a lot of communication. It takes a lot of really heartbreaking conversations sometimes, which is the worst part of my job. But when everyone is sort of on the same page, which after a tough Euros, everyone is actually really excited and motivated. Okay, how do we want to push on? What's our plan for it? And so sort of planning until July 2020, 7 is interesting and exciting. And I think the players like to see that there's actually a plan in place to keep pushing standards. And so do the staff. So there's a sorry, long-winded answer, but for
Oh,
both of
not
them
at all.
slightly different. But sort of building it out and making sure that everyone feels like it's a trusting environment. They can ask questions and also go searching for the answers.
It's a great way of putting it. And it's interesting. I mean, I know you've obviously served on international teams before and whatnot, but how do you find it for yourself as someone, that's played and you've coached at a club level, waiting for those international windows? As you said, you're only starting to get the ball rolling with an awful lot of these girls. But you get them in for a week, you get them in for 10 days at a time, and then they're back at their clubs.
Yeah, so I've been in this role for a year and a half, and I have not had a friendly window yet. So every single game has been a qualifier or a Euro game. And it just means that there's a little less leeway to maybe experiment, try some things. which is tough. And I think that's what's happened with Nations League ABC. And I think there's a lot of positives around it. And the negative is, you want to always be testing and stretching yourself as a coach and equally the team. It's different than Canada, who doesn't have those sort of mandatory qualifier games. It's the qualification in CONCACAF is different, so you have more friendlies, which allows, even though there's pressure on those and you're held to account for them, it's a little bit different because there's not immediate consequence. So working through how that balance now looks, it's just a different job and it's a different country. So like how can I continue to do what I believe in as a coach while still recognizing that we've got to win certain games?
And as we spoke off air, it's not just any country, of course. I mean, it's like a proper full circle moment for yourself taking the Wales job with the family connection too.
Yeah, so my mother is Welsh. My father was English, so I have a bit of both. But we grew up, close with all my grandparents. But we definitely, because I think it was my mother's parents, we come to Wales frequently. And my parents actually took a sabbatical. They're both professors, and so took a sabbatical, moved us back to Wales to just see if that's something we could do as a family. And it was a hard lesson. There was no PE for girls. There was no football for me. And we'd already sort of grown up in Canada a little bit. So I was 9 being told I was not allowed to play football. And however, I did love this country. My grandparents, my aunts, uncles, my cousins are here. Their children are here. And so Wales has always been a very safe place for me. So I played in Norway for a long time. Whenever I've had holidays, I've come back to Wales. I feel like it's that place in my life where I can just breathe. And little did I know then it would be somewhere where I came back to work and reconnected with that family. Of course, we were still connected, but in a different way because I live next door. So I live in just outside the town that my family lived in and where my great aunt, who's 99 in December, lives. So it does feel very full circle. And this is the first job that my mother cares about following. She's very supportive, but doesn't really care about football. But she does now have a new love of what I do.
And obviously, I mean, there's an awful lot of development, occurring on the field, but also off the field. Welsh football is renowned for having one of the best pro license courses, I would say, around, of which you're currently a participant. How has that experience been for yourself?
The pro license.
The pro
Yeah,
license.
so I did my B license when I was still a player, and I think I just reached out, and I was the only female in a cohort of 40 men, and really enjoyed the experience, but also was like, wow, this is different. A lot of the lad mentality. They were really good guys, and they, as soon as you sort of show that you know your stuff, you're okay. But it was quite an intimidating environment, and I'm very grateful for it because I do think women have to recognize that it's not a even environment, and you've got to get your elbows out, and you've got to be able to share your opinion. And then did my A a few years later, and really enjoyed it. And again, some of the same faces, but started to get to know people within the FAW as someone who was sort of working towards coaching. And then, I was already on my pro license when the job came up. So I was already taking my pro and started that process where there's two of us, two females on the course. There's a lot of Champions League coaches of all different levels. And it's interesting, the higher you go in your levels, the less they care that you're female. All they require is, do you know and love football? And that's great. Like it has been quite interesting comparing your B experience, which was very good, but also you really had to work to prove yourself. And then it's become less and less like, oh, if you're on the pro license, you deserve to be here. And I've really, those guys are very close, which is nice to see. And I'm not someone who spends so much time outside of football with the cohort. However, I know I can put, we have a group chat, I can put something in there and I would have any of those guys in a second help me out, which is the best gift of any of the licenses. Anyone who's taken licenses knows that there's the education piece, but more importantly is the connections you make in the game with people going through very similar challenges. And there's not many people you can talk to about it. So I feel very fortunate to have been able to go through those courses.
Indeed, the camaraderie element of these courses is absolutely insane, and it's such an integral part of it. And it's interesting there, as you said. I mean, when you're coaching, especially at a professional level, you know, there's probably not that many people you can confide in that can relate to being in that pressure cooker environment, having to deal with the media, stakeholders, fans, so on and so forth. So, in terms of someone like yourself that's spent your whole life from playing with the Strawberries at a young age to coaching the world's women's national team now, I mean, have you any time possibly sought to kind of go outside of football, go into different sports, go down different alleyways to improve your own leadership or management approach?
Yeah, this has been a busy time for me. My wife lives in California, so I'm trying to balance living in Wales and being fairly present in a relationship. But I do believe in that, and that's where I have to find, because I miss it. What I have done, but it was because I was on the pro license, is I did a project with the University of Duke women's basketball team with Kara Lawson, who I went to university with, and I felt very fortunate to be allowed into that environment, be able to get some time with Kara, who's a fabulous speaker and motivator, and get some insight. And then I also went into the new WNBA franchise in San Francisco, the Valkyries, to see what they were doing. And they're very different. There's like established basketball superpower female coach, and then brand new franchise building from scratch, how Natalie was building her staff around that. So I have been able to go into women's basketball, which is a sport I know nothing about and don't like, really nothing. Women's basketball in Tennessee, where I went to school, was huge. So I would see it every now and then, but I didn't play myself. So I really enjoyed getting into a different type of headspace and seeing what their high performance sort of schedules were, how they handled the players, how they handled building the roster. And those women were so forthcoming and open. And it's definitely something I'd like to keep doing, is how can I get into other sports and continue to learn. So I'll be going to a Rugby World Cup games just to watch those athletes. I've been to a few of them. The same with cricket. I don't know these sport. I know rugby because my dad forced us to know it, but I don't really understand the behind the scenes stuff, and that is exciting for me because it has to be interesting. It's got to be different. It got to be changing things up, and I've got to make sure I don't forget that, because I can see me myself doing that as I get older and maybe a little bit more fatigued, skipping out on the real fundamentals of the job, which is like, how do I continue to push my standards and keep my mind open to new coaching techniques?
And it's an interesting one when we speak about the future for someone that's had such an illustrious career in terms of achieving so much in the game. You know, those 180 caps for Canada as a coach, obviously, you've represented Canada, you've represented England, Great Britain, Wales. I mean, winning the NWSL Championship with Portland Thorns. So, kind of just casting that all aside and looking into the future, you know, someone that's been there, done that, and kind of in one of the top seats of women's football right now, what does success in the future look like for yourself?
Yeah, it's a hard question to answer. Things, life changes so quickly. I think for a long time as a female athlete, many female athletes push life back. It's very challenging. It's starting to happen now, but you start families when you're an athlete. But at the time where I was, it was not a real thing. You couldn't, or you had to retire. And many of my friends did have children, and then their careers were done. And so then you got into sort of your mid to late 30s, you started having families, and then you'd start to try and find a career. And a lot of women left sport because of that. There weren't any roles, and it's starting to change. And yes, coaching is the most obvious, but actually, Melissa Tancredi is the head of medical, or a chiropractor for the national team, who's one of my teammates. Dinah Matheson started the NSL, the league that's in Canada. Robin Gayle's the GM for the Vancouver Rise, as is Steph Labbé, who's on maternity leave right now. I've seen all my former teammates stepping into footballing roles or sporting roles, because another one of my teammates is the general manager for the women's hockey team. And that gets me really excited, because we want to keep women in the game. It's not about excluding men. In fact, I have a problem with the men's game. I had a joke with my pro license boys, and I said, the reason women can't coach men is because our eyes don't move as slowly. and not one of them as quickly, sorry, not one laughed. They didn't know that was a joke. So there is a problem of visibility in the on the men's side. I know we're not ready now to just throw a woman into the dun like into the dungeon, really into the depths by making her a head coach as an example. But that the fact that there's no females in the men's game is shocking. And on the women's side, I'm not excluding men. I'm just saying we want more women. We want the best people there, and there's no reason why it shouldn't be women. So success for me is I love my job. I love it. It's the best job. How sustainable it will be for me in the future, we'll see. But however I can balance my family with trying to give back to the sport and also making it open one. So my environments are very open. I often have coaches come in. I introduce them to the medical side. Like I do see myself connecting more with that piece, and maybe it's advocacy for the for women in sport. I don't know exactly what that looks like, but for as long as there's a space for me and I feel like I'm able to give back and still deliver to a standard that I'm proud of, I'll keep going.
It's amazing because I think we have gone full circle in terms of, speaking about the game you came into as a player compared to, where it is now. It's quite an exciting time, especially where you are right now in the UK, just for the growth of the women's game. I'm just curious to kind of tap into that though a little bit more in terms of we sound as though like we're on the frontier of something really, really special in the women's game over the next decade or so. What do you think is the single biggest thing perhaps that needs to change for, I mean, I would say this kind of growth that's just lying on the table for to fall.
Well, every place has a different issue to go towards. So I think you said you're in Boston?
Chicago.
Chicago. Sorry.
Chicago.
God. I mean, so US and Canada, every young girl plays sports. There's no problem. It just is. And then I come to the UK, and so I was assistant coach for Team GB and for England back before they won the Euros. And you could see that it was something that was building, but what was lacking, and what is lacking in the home nations here, is this idea that sport, and take football out of this, that sport is for everyone, no matter what sport. We're all aware that we want our children to be physically and mentally healthy, and we are all aware of the links between sport and that, right? Like it's very clear in the data, and yet we don't make it accessible. So the grassroots work being done in Wales is another level. 4 years ago, there were 8,000 registered players in the entirety of Wales, in this whole nation, for 8,000. And in the last 4 years, we've more than doubled that, and we will continue to push that. But it's not a unwillingness to do that for our young girls. It's a societal norm that we just need to change, and it's tough. I use my mother as an example. She grew up on a farm in South Wales, and she wouldn't have known to ask for a football team for her daughter unless she'd lived in Canada and seen like, oh, that it could be different. So when we came back to Wales on that sabbatical, she and another woman who had a job in the US, so had also seen it, the two of them went to the school board and tried to make some changes with that. But it just took like no one stood in the way of it. Like it just took someone asking for it because you don't know what to ask for. And I think that for me is the biggest piece around Europe, I would say, is how do we continue with the narrative that sports, athletics, anything that your child is interested in doing as a physical activity is for them. There's no male or female, there's no gendered anything. It's just let's keep our kids physically active. And then I think in North America, where the numbers are amazing, and we know that we're world leading in that, there's definitely a pathway piece. There's a lot of young people that are missed because it's hard to take that many people and have a very clear pyramid for them to come through. But more importantly, I think the narrative there is men versus women, which I find to be a waste of energy. If you enjoy football, you'll enjoy the women's game if you don't compare it to the men's, because the women are not going to be as fast, not going to jump as high, not going to run as fast. But if you enjoy football, you see tactics very differently in the women's game because it's slightly slower. The women are running just as much as the men. It's not an athletics thing. It's just we're different. And that I think on the North American side is the next hurdle is like, can we get away from like just a waste of time narrative and just appreciate sport for sport? So there's different things like that could be coming to Europe, but we've got our first challenge was how do we make it accessible for as many people as possible? And I do think that it would be sort of there are some countries further ahead around Europe, but in general, there's a lot of European countries that still have, you know, footballs for the boys and maybe netball is for the girls or field hockey. Like they've sort of decided these sports are for these people, and we've just gotta keep pointing it out that we don't want that for our children.
It's an interesting one to navigate. However, as you said, there's an awful lot what one role model can do to constitute change. And we speak about role models, Ray, and I think you certainly are one for the women's sport, for the women's game. And I've really enjoyed this last half hour or so speaking with yourself. I mean, it's been really, really, eluding. It's been really insightful just to hear a bit more about how your management approach has changed over time, or how you're always seeking to strive and better yourself, both on and off the field, which I find amazing. They still have the same youthful energy. But as we bring it to a close, and for any young female coach listening, that wants to inspire change and they're that slightly bit inspired by listening to this chat with yourself, what would be the one bit of key advice you'd have for them?
I think chase your interests. I think sometimes we talk about passion or, you know, these things and, you know, that comes from interest and like getting really into something and then digging into it. And I think for young people, it's doesn't matter what it is. If you're interested in it, go have a dig around and maybe you change your mind and you have to jump around a bit. But to go look into your interests, go dig a little and find out what your thing is, because I truly believe everyone has something. And they're all different. We're all uniquely ourselves. And I hope everyone has the space to be able to do that, because I think it's a pretty special thing.
Fantastic. Rhian Wilkinson, big thank you for joining me today.
Thank you very much.